Good evening. So, as Akashashri said, this is the second talk on the theme of spiritual friendship. What I'm going to do is, in a way, take it forward from what Akashashri said last time. She gave a very good introduction, overview of the theme. And I'm going to explore that a bit more about friendship in general and about what spiritual friendship might mean. So, and I'm, a lot of it I'm drawing from my own experience of practicing the Buddhist path over the last 25 years. So I've tried to keep it closer to my experience. So I'll begin with a poem. So it's called The Mask, and it's written by Sangharakshita, our teacher, the founder of the movement. So it goes, "For 7 years, a mask I wore, secure behind and firm before, a mask acceptable and neat, as folk accustomed are to meet. It went to school, it went to college, a mask it was of wit and knowledge. Older grown, it wined and dined, was mask superior, mask refined. Mask prominent, mask most renowned, mask with 100 masks around. One day, it felt so hot and tight, I took it off to say goodnight. Shake hands, I think I tried to smile. It was only for a little while. They shrieked aloud with rage and pain until I put it on, back on again." So, The Mask. And there's an interview recently done a couple of years ago, I think, of Sangharakshita around this poem. So someone in the UK, another order member, interviewed Sangharakshita taking as a theme one of his poems. So there's a series of interviews, and there's one interview about this poem in particular, The Mask. And so in that interview, she reads the poem, and then they have a conversation about it. Sangharakshita says a bit about what was behind that poem. And about this poem, he says it's a poem about concealment, about maybe the necessity of concealment, about mutuality of concealment, about how people find it hard to open up to other people. But it's also a poem that about that in the long term, how, what a relief it is to get rid of this mask. To that, I would even add what a relief it is to be among people who are not constantly wearing that mask, or at least who for a while, or with, to be with someone for a while where you both can drop that mask. I mean, what a pity it will be if one had to go through one's life without ever having any opportunity to put aside that mask or to meet someone where you didn't have that interplay. So I think for me, you know, this encapsulates the essence of a good friendship. A good friendship, I feel, is one where we both can drop that mask for a little while and just be ourselves. You feel met, and you feel you're meeting someone in a more genuine, deeper way than we normally get to in everyday kind of social interaction. Yeah, I mean, I would say to even if I go through an extended period where I don't have that kind of interaction, I feel it as a kind of a deep need. I feel it as a suffering of not having, being able to have that kind of interaction. Yeah, so, and for me, I think that is, in a way, the centrality or the essence of what a good friend is able to provide, or you are able to provide a good friend, that kind of meeting at a deeper level, about we can both put down that mask for a little while. So have a think in your own experience. Are there people in your life? Are there with whom you can at least, you feel for a while, sometimes put down that mask, or who you feel put down their mask when they interact with you. So something to have a think about. Just a kind of caution here. When I say a friend is someone with whom you can be kind of open up and put a mask down, there could be a misconception that, well, to put it another way, a friend is not a psychoanalyst. So, you know, I think of these Woody Allen movies. I love Woody Allen movies. And, you know, he lives in this world in Manhattan, and the world is very small, you know, so all Manhattan. And almost everyone in his orbit, in his world, in those movies, has an analyst who they regularly have been seeing for years. So I don't see a friend as that kind of an analyst with whom you can dump the contents of your psyche every now and then. The difference, I think, is that of reciprocity. There's a mutuality in friendship that's not there in a psychoanalyst kind of relationship. I'm not saying those are not necessary, or for some people they may be vital, but with a friend there's a reciprocity. You drop your mask, and they drop their mask, and you are both open to each other, at least from time to time, to some degree. Yeah, and you see the other person as an individual for who they are. You don't see a professional, a psychoanalyst. You see just the other person, and they see you. You're not playing any roles. You're just being who you are. So I think that, I feel that is a distinction. The other kind of caution I would say is, I don't see friendship, and sometimes you see that in kind of sitcoms, in the on TV and things like that. A friendship is not a sentimental thing. Yes, maybe in the beginning it might be. There might be a period of kind of romance, so-called, you know, because there's a kind of a mutual attraction. You find the person interesting. You want to know a bit more about them. And but you know, there's this word called bromance at the moment. but I think with time, something in a true friendship, something deeper emerges. And there are things like appreciation, gratitude, and maybe even a kind of a bewilderment as you get to know the person more and all their sides. You know, what you saw in the beginning, like a cardboard cutout, suddenly becomes a three-dimensional person, and there's these other sides to them that you didn't even realize. So, yeah. So I think with time, something deeper emerges. It's not a friendship is not a sentimental thing. Let's look at friendship in today's world. And I would say, and I haven't done any like a objective research, but just from what I hear, what I see, what other people say, my own experience, I feel friendship is something definitely on the back foot in today's world, in our busy lives, if not something in crisis. I mean, the digital world, the new, brave new digital world with its social media, on instant email, WhatsApp messages and whatnot, was supposed to have made connection easier somehow. But what we find is an increased isolation. How weird, how strange. I think there's many reasons for that. It's the digital media, the online world is one part in that complex picture. But I think it's a particularly potent and relevant subject. I mean, Facebook, I don't know about a lot of the digital medias because I try not to spend too much time on them, on the social medias, but Facebook, I'm on Facebook quite a lot. And, you know, people have dozens, even hundreds of friends on Facebook. You can have hundreds, thousands of friends. What does that mean? What does being a friend on Facebook mean? And, you know, every now and then I get a sense of how shallow this is all, particularly poignant for me was there was a guy who used to come here called David Shope. Some of you might know him. And he used to come quite regularly. He came for a few years, and I got to know him a bit. And then he moved to the U.S. from where he was. He moved back to the U.S. And so I tried to keep in touch with him via Facebook. I used to see his posts on Facebook. And I remember he had a few hundred friends, well over 100 anyway. And I used to see photos of him having a great time with his friends. He used to be into dancing, into Serok dancing, and he used to often post photographs of him with all his mates dancing Serok. And I thought, well, this guy is having a good time. He has a great social life. A few weeks later, I hear he has committed suicide. It's total shock to all of us who knew him. And it just, I mean, you know, there were probably many reasons behind that, but what to me it did was just show me how thin this veneer of Facebook social life is. You know, it's like there was this whole life going on behind it which had nothing to do with this mask that Facebook can become. And I think there are many reasons, coming back to friendship, is why I feel friendship is on the back foot. One of the obvious reasons is the pace of life. Pace of life is this is, and that's tied up with choices. We have lots of choice nowadays. Lots of choices mean we try to do lots of things. It means we try to fit a lot of things in, and some things get left behind. Don't get given enough importance. The other one, kind of surprisingly, I think, is affluence. Affluence. When you live in an affluent society, you don't need others as much. You are more self-sufficient. You live in an affluent country, you don't need to depend on others because the state provides if you get into trouble. I know that because I come from India, and that's not the case there. You know, people still have to depend on their social networks, on their friends, at times to stay alive, to get things done. There's a very objective need for survival to do that, which is not, in a way, there to that extent over here. So, and also, interestingly, as sections of society in India become affluent, particularly in the cities, I see the same thing happening. People have becoming atomized in their own little world because, you know, they don't need others anymore. And the other one is, I think, and Sangrakshita and others have talked a bit about this as well, is the overemphasis on the couple, or overemphasis on the romantic relationship as being the only real, true relationship, in kind of to detriment of others. I'm not saying it's not important, but, you know, often in the kind of popular media, in the songs, you just maybe hear the ones crying out for their dear friends, their message. It's all about the lover. So that's also something that's cultural and more, in a way, it's recent. It didn't always used to be like this. So I think because of that overemphasis on one particular kind of relationship, the other relationships have suffered, and friendship, just an ordinary friendship being one of them. I mean, look at the word platonic friendship, as if it's something not quite right. You know, the word platonic is somehow, there's the romantic relationship and then there's a platonic friendship. It's just by the by, it's not the real thing. So, you know, these even words are loaded nowadays. That wasn't what was originally meant by platonic friendship, not what Plato meant by the friendship when he talked about. And I think that this crisis is particularly acute for men. Particularly acute for men. And that's, again, I've not got research to back it up. I'm just saying it from my own experience. And I think there's some of the reasons are cultural. It's not quite like that in all cultures. Just as a experiment, I googled the word friendship on the internet, and I looked at the images. You know, you can do an image search. So I did an image search on the word friendship and try that. So you look at the images that come up. There were quite a few images of women together, two women, more than two women. There were quite a few images of kids together. Small kids, maybe boys holding hands, quite a few cartoon characters, even animals, some bigger groups where men and women were mixed. There were quite a few images of men and women of holding hands, or like the romantic relationship. page after page, there was hardly any image of two men together. Does that, you know, does friendship between men not exist? Or is it something that's so, such a taboo, such a, some, to be shoved under the carpet that we can't mention it? I mean, what is going on? Yeah, so, and I think that, you know, there's things to do with homophobia and stuff like that that's at play here. And it is particularly acute, I would say, in my experience, having traveled and lived around the world quite a bit in the, I would say, Anglo-Saxon countries in the English-speaking world, US, Australia, New Zealand, Britain. It's not, friendship between men are still not such a taboo in India or even in Latin countries. I mean, even French men still kiss each other on the cheeks. I mean, you can't imagine two Kiwi blokes doing that. So there's kind of a fear of physicality, and I think that creates a barrier in friendship between men. Yeah. Anyway, so moving on. There's a famous book. It began as a blog, but a blog, online blog, written by and then became a book. And it's written by I can't remember her name, but this woman who was a palliative nurse. So she's been working many, many years with people who are dying, and she wrote this blog called "The Top 5 Regrets While Dying." We come across that. It became very popular in the social media. So I'll just read part of it. You can Google it, by the way, you'll come across it online. So it began as a blog, and then now she's written a book called the same thing, The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying. So one of them is, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. And read a little bit of what she says about it. She says, often these are people who are dying, would not realize the full benefits of old friends until their dying weeks, and it was not always possible to track them down. Many had become so caught up in their own lives that they had let golden friendships slip by over the years. There were many deep regrets about not giving friendships the time and effort that they deserved. Everyone misses their friends when they're dying. The other five regrets, just to let you know, were I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life that others expected of me. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. And I wish that I had let myself be happier. So I think it's fairly obvious, and you know, many of us know this anyway, that friendships, having friends, real friends, is something that's very important for a normal, healthy human life at a very ordinary level. It is what makes us feel fully human. Here we're not even talking about treading the spiritual path. This is just at an ordinary, for psychological and emotional health, friendship is important. And we suffer when we don't have that for an extended period of time to some degree. So what about spiritual friendship? So where does this spiritual thing fit in to friendship, or friendship into the spiritual thing? So let's look at kind of Buddhism, what Buddhism says about friendship. So the word that's often, the term that's used in Buddhism, which is translated as spiritual friendship, is kalyana mitrata. Kashishri mentioned it last week. And there's various ways of translating this term. So mitrata is very straightforward. It means friendship. Now kalyana is a manifested word. So kalyana can mean good, wholesome, beautiful, admirable, beneficial. So a friendship that is all these things. but not just in a worldly manner, in a material way. So, you know, something can be, you can have a friendship that's beneficial in a purely material way. Someone helps you out with something. Or it can be beneficial in a psychological way, in an emotional way. It gives us pleasure. We enjoy being with our friends, and that's there too. But I think here what we're talking about is something that is beneficial in a more of a spiritual sense, and I'll explore what that might mean. And this links back to what Akasha Sri was saying about the three levels of friendship that Aristotle talked about. There's friendships. He talked about three levels of friendship: friendship based on usefulness, on pleasure, and goodness. So, yeah, you can see that, you know, this word kalyana, beautiful or beneficial, can be applied at all these levels. But generally, when we talk about spiritual friendship or kalyana mitrata in Buddhism, we're talking particularly about the something that's beneficial to us and others in a spiritual way. And the other kinds of benefits may well be there as well, and often are. And there are a number of instances of the Buddha talking, we find about kalyana mitrata in the Pali Canon. And I feel, reading many of those, that it's the Buddha doesn't quite mean the same thing by this term in these places. So sometimes the term has a particular emphasis, and other times it has a slightly different emphasis. It's a bit like the word dharma, those of you who know Buddhism a little bit. The word dharma is a very common word in Buddhist literature and teachings of the Buddha, but it can mean something a bit different depending on the context in which he's using it. Sometimes it just means the path, the teaching of the Buddha, what he has taught. Sometimes it might mean a particular teaching. The dharma is, you know, a particular teaching of the Buddha, not just general teaching of the Buddha. And sometimes it can mean reality. Just like when you come in contact with the dharma, talking as if when you come into touch with reality itself. So in a similar way, I think the term kalyana mitrata is sometimes used to emphasize different things. And I can make out at least two different levels or two different ways this phrase kalyana mitrata is used. So firstly, I think the Buddha talks about kalyana mitrata as friendship and association with other people who are on the same spiritual path as us. And the emphasis here is on people. We're talking about real people, not imaginary people, not just books or something. We're talking about friendship with real people who are practicing. There is, I'll read an example of this. So this is from the Pali Canon. There's a part of it called the Iti Vutaka. Iti Vutaka, this thing translates as saying of in the ones, because there's this kind of list of ones and twos and three. This is the part wherein the ones. Anyway, it's just a short passage I'll read out. This was said by the Blessed One, said by the Arhat. So I have heard. And often Buddhist sutras begin like that, teachings of the Buddha, because it's his friend Ananda reciting what he heard the Buddha say. So what the Buddha says is, with regard to external factors, I don't envision any other single factor like spiritual friendship as doing so much for a disciple in training, someone who has not attained the heart's goal but remains intent on the unsurpassed safety from bondage. A disciple who is a friend with admirable people abandons what is unskillful and develops what is skillful. And then there's a short verse. A disciple with admirable people as friends, who's reverential, respectful, doing what his friends advise, mindful, alert, attains step by step the ending of all fetters. So here the Buddha is very much talking about actual people. There's another one in the similar. This is from the Dhammapada. Should one find a man who points out faults and reproves, let him follow such a wise and sagacious person as one who would guide as one would guide to a hidden treasure. It is always better and never worse to cultivate such an association. So he's saying, if you find someone who can point out your faults and show you the way, stay with him. He's a good friend. So again, the emphasis on, and he's talking about spiritual friendship. So the emphasis is on a real person as being a friend. So I think here the Buddha in these passages, and there's a number of them, I won't go through a lot of them, but in these passages, the Buddha is advocating good company, keep good company. Fairly straightforward teaching. Keep good company. Stay away from bad company. It's what we tell our teenagers. For those who have teenage kids, that's what we tell them. You know, the effect company has on kids, but you can also sometimes see the effect company has on us and our friends. So keep good company, because it affects you. But he's also saying that he thinks the single most important factor in our spiritual progress, especially when we are still learning, we are kind of earlier on the path, is spiritual friendship. Single most important factor. He's not saying the other things are not important, meditation and so on, but he thinks that's a very key factor, especially in the early stages when we, as he calls it, when the heart's release is immature, when we haven't developed our wisdom to its fullest. And I have to say, personally, I did not see Buddhism in this way for a long time. I came to Buddhism because I wanted to learn to meditate, and I attended the Buddhist Center in Wellington many years ago, and I just wanted to learn to meditate. Then I wanted to find out why meditation works like it does. I went on a few retreats, and I was amazed by the effects it had on me. So it was very much to do with my kind of search for, in a way, meaning. I wanted to make sense of life. I kind of had a feeling that there must be more to life than just kind of getting older, having a job, maybe having a partner, having a family, and then it's downhill all the way after that. So, I don't know, there must be more. I kind of had, it wasn't even all thought out. I can see there was an instinctive search for something. I felt there must be something more. I had a kind of inkling of it. And I felt meditation in particular was something that I could learn and apply myself. I didn't have to depend on other people's word for what this meaning might be. I can explore reality myself. And it took a long time. It's only now, looking back, in a way, I can see what an important role other people have played in that for me. It's in a way humbling. Here I was, I wanted to do this myself, and I thought I was doing it myself. And it's only now, looking back, I can see, wow, I actually received so much help from others, and I wouldn't have been able to do it without them. So, yeah. So sometimes it takes a while to acknowledge the role other people play in our life, and particularly in the spiritual life. Because, you know, if here we are, and I'm sure we've all seen something, that's why we are here. You know, we could be doing 100 different things, but we are here because we got this quest in us, for we think that there is more to life. And we are in the minority, you know. A lot of people, the majority, don't follow that quest for one reason or the other. So at a very basic level, it's like we need each other in kind of affirming, yes, what you feel is what I feel as well. You're not mad. I know a lot of people out there don't, but I feel it. And so at a very kind of that kind of friendship in terms of witnessing each other's what we say going for refuge, each other's quest for meaning. And I think that's an important part, aspect of this friendship. However, I think that's not the full story, because friendship is not just about, and Sangha is not just about coming to a group. Yes, a group is necessary, and we provide each other support, supportive conditions, And this is what Sangharakshita sometimes calls a positive group. But then sooner or later, we have to, I think it's important that we develop friendships, individual personal friendships with some of the people coming along. And that's what you see actually happens over time. That's what I see happen with me over time. I started going on retreats and things, and I met few people with whom I clicked quite easily, and with others it took a bit more work. But I formed over time these individual friendships. Not a lot, but enough. And those people had their own friendships within the Sangha. So it becomes like a kind of a network of individual friendships. So I think that's an important aspect of Sangha that shouldn't be overlooked. Sangha isn't a spiritual community, just isn't coming together as a group, even a positive group. It's actually forming those one-to-one connections. Because it's really in those connections that we can start to drop that mask that I was talking about in the beginning. And start to meet each other. On the other hand, it's not exclusively that either. You know, it's a bit of both. Because I know people whom, you know, for example, my preceptor, Sona, the person who ordained me, I feel a deep friendship with him, but I don't see him very often. So I can't have a friendship with him like I have with Ratnavyuha, for example, here. He and I meet each other quite often. We see each other in our chapter. I have a certain kind of more personal relationship with him, whereas with my preceptor Sona, who lives in the UK, even though that is, friendship is in a way very important to me, maybe more important than my other friendships, I don't expect that kind of matey hanging out with him. It's a different kind of friendship. So it's interesting. Yeah. There'll be a kind of a variety of friendships, you could say. And you do find in the Buddhist tradition many inspiring stories of personal friendships. So Buddhism isn't just about people going off on their own, meditating in caves or in the forest or staying in monasteries by themselves, whatever. The Buddhist literature tradition is replete with many examples of friendships. The most probably well-known ones being, firstly, the one between Buddha and Ananda. Ananda was a disciple of his, much younger, and they were very close friends, especially for the last 25 years of his life. And especially as the Buddha got older, Ananda, there's very moving accounts of how Ananda looked after him and how upset he was when the Buddha died. The other, perhaps not as well known one, is between two of Buddha's leading disciples, and their name were Shariputra and Moggallana. So the two of them is a kind of a celebrated lifelong friendship that we read about. And these two guys were really interesting. They grew up in a village as childhood friends. They decided to leave the home life, as they called it, go off into the forest in the search of truth together. And they made a pact with each other. It wasn't a suicide pact. It was a pact saying that if one of them found the truth, he will tell the other about it. So when one of them, can't remember which one was the first, came across the Buddha and really responded to his teaching, he told the other one about it. And they both gained enlightenment under the discipleship of the Buddha. And they also died within a couple of weeks of each other. This all happened 2,500 years ago. But to this date, there is a stupa. You know what a stupa is? So like a big mound, kind of a traditional Buddhist monument in a place called Sanchi in central India, where some of the relics of Shariputra and Moggallana are still together in one stupa after 2,500 years. So again, a very moving account of a friendship. So personally speaking, I would say for me, I have found the friendships within the Sangha, and I've had friends outside as well. I'm not saying that's not there, but particularly with my friendship within the Sangha, I found them kind of probably the most rewarding and the most challenging aspect of the Buddhist path. And I'll tell you why. How are we doing with time? Okay, I'll hurry up a little bit. So I think it's rewarding because I find that my life is infinitely richer for having these connections, having these friends. You know, I can think of people I've known, I've practiced with over the years here in Wellington, in the UK, and with some of them, I feel I have a deep connection. Particularly, I think of Achala in Wellington, who I lived with in a community for 7 years, and then since then, he was living in the UK, in New Zealand, and I moved to the UK for a few years, and then he moved to India for a few years, and then I came back to the UK and to New Zealand, and he moved to the UK. So it's like we've been dancing, doing this dance, or staying in different countries. But recently he came back to live in New Zealand. But all through this time, we've always kept in touch. We kind of managed to meet up once a year, once in 2 years sometime. But we keep in touch via Skype, email, maybe once every 2 or 3 months we do have. And it takes an effort, but it's like really rewarding. He's someone I feel I can just, who knows me through all this time, who's seen me from when I was 23 year old to now, 25 years later. So, and I feel my life is infinitely richer for having that him as a friend in my life. And similarly, you know, I can think of a few others. And yeah, so this is, you know, it's allowing oneself to be seen and seeing the other person for whom they are. And we see seeing them for whom they are, not just as a projection of who we want them to be, because we want everyone else to be like ourselves in the end. You know? And that's how we see. If we don't, when we see people superficially, we just see them as a projection. It's only when we get to know people better, we see that actually they are not just figment of our imagination. They're a weird and wonderful thing in their own right. Some of it we may not like. And it's coming to the challenge. And I think both these kinds of friendships, whether it's in a group, as a sangha, or one-to-one friendships, they both present a challenge as well. And that's, again, I think a hallmark of a true friendship from time to time is challenging. Particularly on the Buddhist path, it can be challenging because our friend can question our ethical conduct, or can question in what way certain choices that we are making are in line with our aspiration of following the Buddhist path. So there's a transfer. You know, I feel like with some of my friends, I can have that transparency, that ethical transparency. I don't have to hide things. I know they won't necessarily condone it, but they won't. They will understand. They will understand my feeble attempts to do what I'm trying to do. But I think the friendships can also be challenging in another way. It's because it's in friendships that you start to see the competitiveness, or starting to in oneself. I can see the competitiveness, sometimes the envy, the jealousy, the whole status thing. Within us, within ourselves, and you see that in others, you see that in your friend, and because you know we are not perfect beings. Even though we're trying to follow the spiritual life, the Buddhist path, the ethical conduct, but these things are there. We do get jealous, we do get competitive with each other, and we have to take that into account. There's a quote that I like. I don't know who it's from. It goes something like, the essence of friendship is learning to forgive each other's little shortcomings. So the essence of friendship is learning to forgive each other's little shortcomings. And I think unless we can do that, friendships don't endure, because you end up with resentment and things. You have to be able to forgive those little shortcomings in ourselves and in our friend. So I think, and similarly learning to rejoice, you know, start to learn to rejoice in the good qualities, in the difference. You know that you want them to be like you, but they'll never be like you, and they want you to be like them, and you'll never be like them. So yeah, there's that tension always there, and you learn to rejoice in that difference, rejoice in the good qualities in yourself and the others. One doesn't negate the other. So I think little by little, the friendships become a real life arena for the things that we talk about in Buddhism, for metta, for forgiveness, for gratitude, all these things that we talk about, kindness, a friendship becomes a real life arena for that. You know, I have to put sometimes my friend in my metta bhavana, sometimes in the first stage, sometimes in the fourth stage. And I think little by little, through friendships, we can start to soften the hard shell of our constant self-reference, the hard, which we call egotism. Something begins to soften as you rub up against each other. And we start to see life, not just from our perspective, but we start to see life as an interplay. It's like a drama, like a Shakespearean play. We were talking about Shakespeare, in which it's not happening out there. We are an actor in it. We are influencing it. It determines where it goes as well. We are part of it. So we start to see, and I think that there's something of what we call wisdom in that. There's something of what the Buddha would call the starting of wisdom, of interconnectedness, of conditionality. And the other thing I've seen is, I would say, as we develop spiritually, we increase our capacity to be a friend. Being able to be a friend is not, to form friendship, is not something constant. As we become a deeper, more rounded, maybe a more humble individual ourselves, we become more capable of being friends to others. And I very much see that some of the senior order members who I've known for a long time, who I have a lot of respect for, one thing I see common in all of them is their capacity to be a friend to others. And you know, I hope I can kind of be like them in the future. So, but friendship is difficult. I know. I know. And a friendship doesn't happen automatically. It's not, you can't just have a group and expect friendships to arise automatically by themselves. Friendship requires understanding, it requires an intention, it requires effort, it requires skill. And I've seen that. I've seen people working together, even in Buddhist contexts, like when I was working at Windhorse in the UK. I know people who are living in the same community, working together, following the same Buddhist path, doing the same practices, yet some people never made friends. They were still isolated. So I know it doesn't happen. It requires intention, it requires still, it requires understanding that it won't happen by itself. But it is a skill that can be learned. So what's the secret? I'm going to tell you the secret. Are you ready? The secret is, give it the importance that it deserves in your life. Give it the time and attention that it deserves in your life. Take a risk. And be patient. Like good wine, it takes time to mature. And we provide many, many things to foster these friendships. There are many opportunities here. Retreats are a particularly good one. I mean, I think a lot of my friendships within the Sangha have started from retreats, or being strengthened on being on retreats with people. Study groups, we have study groups where we meet regularly and study the Dharma, come to know each other better. Yeah, so we have the opportunity, but it won't happen by itself. We don't need many friends. We don't need many one-to-one friendships, but I think definitely some will enrich your life. Lastly, I will just talk very quickly about this. I said there were two aspects, at least two levels I found. This word kalyana mitrata, is spiritual friendship, is used in the Buddhist texts. One is friendship with people, but you know, real life people following the Buddhist path. But I think there's another way that sometimes you find kalyana mitrata or spiritual friendship being used by the Buddha. And here is probably one of the most famous passages that's often quoted when people talk of spiritual friendship. So Ananda goes to the Buddha once and says, excuse me. He goes to the Buddha and says, I worked it out. I think spiritual friendship is half of the spiritual life. And he goes, Buddha goes, no, say not so, Ananda, say not so. Spiritual friendship is the whole of the spiritual life. And I think here, the Buddha is not just talking about friendship with people. Because friendship with people is not the whole of the spiritual. I mean, it's obvious, because we also have meditation, we have study, reflection, going on solitary, spending time by yourself, learning to know oneself. So there's a lot of things which involve other people, there are things which don't involve other people. So what is the Buddha talking about? I think here, the term kalyana mitrata is being used in the sense that, in the sense of friendship with the beautiful. And here the beautiful means that we touch through spiritual practice, through all these things like meditation, puja, retreats, study, ethics, reflection, being on solitary, being through friendships, through all these things, slowly by slowly we start to touch something that is inherently and deeply beautiful, that is inherently and deeply beneficial and wholesome to us, to the world. And we often, the Buddhism also often talk of this thing as the bodhicitta. And I think as our practice deepens, this contact with this sense of being in contact with something beautiful can become more and more the mainstay of our life. It can really strengthen, not something we experience occasionally, but something that's running thread through our life. Yeah, and Buddhist tradition says even in time, as that deepens, we can even start to be guided by archetypal Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And that's another talk in itself. I won't go in there. Maybe the forces in the world that we start to come into touch with, we start to have a relationship with that. But the foundation for all that begins here, begins with ordinary people, with imperfect people, with you, with me, with us.